we got Coach Carl here, but and he's a guy that we should probably ask about it too, but it just seems like momentum's waning. And then here we go again. Like, I didn't see the whole video, but how can you shoot somebody in the back when he doesn't, I mean, as LeBron James said, and I said, can you not tackle him? Can you not grab him and, you know, put him on the ground and put his hands behind his back and talk and settle him down and find out? Do you have to shoot the guy in the back as he's getting into his car with his kids in the back? It doesn't make sense to me. And it happens too often. It happens too much. So, let's get to some basketball, E. And I've got some more thoughts on this, but it's great that we have Coach Carl, who I'm sure has dealt with this kind of stuff in a locker room too with his players. And you know, as a guy who was, and I say this about George Carl, he was the absolute best coach with one of the quirkiest group of players and the personalities he had on his teams. He was Mr. Cotter. He handled some real knucklehead classrooms and got great work out of them. So I'd love to know what he thinks about some of this.
Well, we bring him into the conversation right now. As Jonesy says, longtime NBA head coach George Carl joining us on the line right now. Coach, thanks for your time today.
No problem at all. And I want to agree 100% with you. Our country needs to wake up. And to be honest with you, white people got to wake up, because it's a white people problem. It's not a black people problem. It's our problem in America. We got to work together. We got to support each other. But we cannot have it anymore. It's been tolerated. Suppression of the black people and African-American people in our country. Everybody knows it. I don't care what you say. We all know that we need to do better in this area, and we need to stand up and not be silent anymore. Say what you feel, talk about it, communicate with it, and make it better.
Coach, as I said, I mean, I think of some of the locker rooms you had, and I always say this, George Carl was the coach that got the most out of some quirky personalities. Like I said, people of our vintage won't know this, but you were like Mr. Cotter with some of the sweat hogs, with some of those locker rooms you had. Did you have some of these social justice and life talks with some of your players? Because I know you got through to them on a different level to have them perform for you, and it wasn't all basketball.
Well, I think today's game, I think 20 years ago, yeah. I mean, there's a lot more connection and communication with your player. You hung out a little bit more off the court. Before the day of the nutrition and the PR director and the agent and the shooting coach and the body coach. Today's game has a lot more people around the game. But, yeah, you have conversations like this in your locker room. Sometimes you do it as a group, but mostly it's done with smaller groups. You know, two or three men group where you're hanging out after practice and you talk about the situation that happens now. And I'm proud of the NBA. I'm proud of the Players Association. I think they're doing the right thing. They're going to take some. They're going to take some shots. People are going to take some shots at them. But I'm glad. I hope they stand up and keep standing up and keep being a leader of, social injustice, whatever you want to call it, social injustice, economic injustice, prejudice, whatever you want to call it. We have a lot of it, and we've tiptoed around it way too long.
Speaking with George Carl, a longtime NBA head coach, and if you want to hear more from Coach Carl as well, go to truthinbasketball.com for his podcast and more of his thoughts directly from the source as well. Coach, we've talked a lot about this over the course of the last month or couple of months, myself and Jonesy and many other shows as well. Why do you think it is that the NBA has been the more progressive league over the last X number of decades, not just X number of years, in terms of allowing players to have that platform, that voice? And Adam Silver, even more so, I would argue, at least, even, and this isn't to say that David Stern didn't allow it, but Silver more so than Stern, allowing that platform and the players to have the voice, certainly more than we see from the other four majors, or the other three majors, I guess, in North America.
I agree 100%. David Stern started it. And David Stern was a very liberal Democrat. He believed in civil rights. I think he might even have worked in that area before he got to the NBA. And Adam has jumped on and gotten it and multiplied it, doubled it, I think. He's opened up the window, and he's encouraged the player to to be not to be afraid of using his their brand and their form to say things that might even hurt the NBA's popularity. But he wants that, and I think it will be kind of a model that I think other leagues are going to follow. I think basically basketball and pro sports, our players are not players anymore. They're celebrities. They're entertainers. And they have off-the-court situations that you have to deal with. And some of them who want to do it quietly and not to be involved, that's cool too. But the ones that want to stand up and be leaders in our civil society and speak out, I'm 100% behind them.
George, man, we could – maybe Eric and I need to get on the podcast or something because we could go an hour with you here right now. And I want to transition a little bit to basketball. And when I think of you and your resume and I look at Nick Nurse, there's a lot of steps in the same direction. He was in the minor leagues and did a good job. And you were two-time coach of the year in the CBA, coach of the year in the NBA. Nick's been now named coach of the year. And people kind of looked at you the way we look at Nick right now. Like, you're not afraid. You weren't afraid to kind of, hey, let's try this because I think it works. And unafraid to have people look at you and say, you can't do that. And you know, we saw Nick Nurse play box and one in the NBA Finals, and people raised their eyebrow going, you don't do that here. That it's almost like it's bad etiquette. But he knows it works. It worked for him. And now we see people kind of copying that. And I think about your defenses in Seattle, and I think about watching Bob Kloppenberg up on the sideline yelling all these terms, shadow, shadow, shrink, shrink. And people are saying, what are these guys talking about? But it works. So when you look at Nick, do you see how much of yourself in that, well, I'm not afraid, I'm going to try this because I know it works attitude?
I agree 100%. I appreciate it as a compliment to me that Nick is doing such a great job. You know, I've been around him just a very little, but when I've been around him, I think we talk the same language and we feel the love of the game and the creativity of the game is sometimes when you don't have the best team, you got to put things with your team that makes it better. And outside the box thinking in not only pro basketball, but pro sports is a little bit controlled by, you know, the money and the management of it. But I just think it's great. I think, you know, my son is a coach for the South Bay Lakers and G League. And I tell him all the time, I mean, my thing right now is I think the zone has got to come back into the game because we can't control the ball anymore. The ball just goes anywhere it wants to go. And I don't know what zone it is. Is it 1-3-1 or, you know, 1-2-2 or something to keep the damn ball from getting into the paint and getting free to the basket, which is creating the great offense that we have today's game.
Coach, maybe a simplistic question from you here. Why is the zone, A, so effective so often, but B, so perplexing at times to offenses? For guys that have seen this, I would assume, in some capacity since their grade school days, let alone high school, college, and it seems like they're thrown for a complete loop more often than not when they see it at the professional level.
Well, I think there's a surprise factor in there. I also think there's certain players. Like, one of my favorite players ever to play the game of basketball was Andre Miller. I loved him. I think he's one of the most underrated point guards that ever played in the NBA. But when you zoned him, it froze him. And, you know, I think he has one of the best basketball minds I've ever been around. His IQ, from a standpoint of making the team work and making players better and making great passes, he's a top 10 player. But the zone confused him. It slowed him down. It seemed like it slowed down his decisions. And I think a lot of the NBA game is now spacing, but also matchups and isolation oriented. And the zone kind of takes most of those things away. You got to be really smart to get an isolation play against a 2-3 zone. And there are teams that do it very well. The weakness, of course, of the zone is it gives the three ball up and it gives offensive rebounding up. But right now, most defenses I watch give up both. They give up the three ball. They give They give up offensive rebounding. So why shouldn't we try some more? Because in the bubble right now, it's an offensive game. And maybe the league loves that. But, you know, my old school mentality is I think the defense, I want the defense to get more and more involved in the game right now. And I think, I'm hoping, and I think I'm going to be right. The team that wins the NBA championship is going to find, is going to win some games with their defense and not totally rely upon offense and have more of a balanced personality. And in a lot of ways, that's kind of why I like Toronto. You know, the Toronto might not have LeBron or, you know, Anthony Davis or the Greek Freak or, you know, or one of the superstars. But they have an identity, and they believe in each other more than I think any team in the NBA right now. And trust and belief is where the game is tested when you get to a game seven. Trust and belief in each other is when you're tested, when you got, well, you don't have the home court now. But, you know, when you have to win a game on the road in an NBA playoff game, it takes trust, confidence, and belief in each other to help each other through the mission.
Coach, I heard you talk about the game on a recent, recently on the radio, and I'm kind of that vintage too. I mean, looking at some of the stuff that guys are doing now offensively, and I'm sure there's guys like yourself and Gary Payton and, you know, Charles Oakley, guys are laughing because the physical nature of the game back in the 80s and 90s would never let some of this stuff happen. And I think you're right. The league has kind of wants the offense, but you made an interesting point about the long ball. And you said there were nights when you were coaching recently when you figured you had the best player on the floor, but yet you didn't win the game because of the neutralization of that big player, that best player, by the three ball. Everybody's chucking him from the parking lot. And the analytics say, you know, take more threes and you know, all this effective field goal percentage. And, you know, Eric and I always laugh, three better than two, but two better than nothing. And parts of the game are disappearing, the inside game, the low post game. But, you know, where are we at with the game now? Are we ever going back to see some of the stuff that we valued so much in the late 80s, early 90s?
I think the league is somewhere, I don't know if it's in the next couple of years, but I think somewhere in the near future, they're going to have to experiment with the G League. Maybe moving the line back and trying to bring the game, the paint game, the mid-range game back into the valuable. But, you know, again, I think right now, everybody, I mean, I'm amazed at the shots that are going in the basket. I mean, not only, I mean, in this bubble, I actually have said the rim looks like it's bigger. Because they're making so many long-range jump shots. Or the ball is smaller or something. I don't know. But there are certain games that everybody's shooting the ball unbelievably well. And a lot of people have talked about maybe the background has helped because you don't have the big arenas. You don't have the crowd maybe yelling and screaming at you. Maybe that helps people shoot the ball better. But in general, I've actually had meetings with coaches when they've come through Denver about, can we put a little bit of hand-checking back into the game to where we can help our guys cover the ball a little bit better? You know, maybe not a straight-arm hand-check, but at least a soft hand-check. Because when you're trying to get over screens, you lose your balance. And anything that you help sustain your balance with, maybe a little hand-check here or there that we can maybe live with, I would recommend. I just think the physicality of the game in a lot of ways has gotten to be so finesse-oriented and so pretty-oriented rather than the old-school physicality games of, as you said, of the 90s. And I mean, the game was much, much more difficult to play when we were allowed to hold and grab a little bit more.
Well, I'll tell you to that point as well, Coach. I know when Jonesy and I are doing broadcasts, we both, and Jonesy certainly played at a much higher level than I ever did, but my goodness, I don't even know what a flagrant foul is anymore, or what constitutes a tech anymore, because you can't breathe on somebody in today's NBA. Dare I say what happened 15 years ago, let alone 25, 30 years ago in the league. I can't even understand when the whistle's blown half the time what's going on with some of the calls that are being made in the NBA.
Yeah, they definitely have cleaned that up. I mean, I would have been fined a lot more money if I was playing in today's game because I was kind of the guy that was sent in to beat somebody up or hold and grab until he might throw a punch at me or something, you know. So I'm taking charges, diving on the floor and all that stuff, trying to add some hustle and extra possessions to the game. But in the same sense, I like the game. I mean, don't get me wrong. I like a fast-moving game. I've always played fast. But I think we softened it up to the point where I don't know if it's in the next couple of years, but I think if it sustains the momentum to everybody playing the way they're playing now, I mean, playing fast, everybody basically does it. The Lakers are trying to play it with big people, but they got the best player in basketball helping that to work. So I don't know anybody's going to try to use that system again.
Coach, last one for me. I know we're coming up against the clock. You talked about liking Toronto and, you know, no superstar, but guys really, really playing together. And they're doing it with some of their important people are not the biggest and strongest. When I think about Lowry, Van Vliet, good guard play used to keep you in games. Now good guard play is winning you games. Just what do you like about their personnel? Are there certain players in particular you say, you know what, that dude could have played for George Karl and, you know, with the Sonics or when I was coaching in the ABA I like these dudes. Give me a few of them that you like and why you like them.
Well, first off, it starts with your point guard and your center. They could have played in any generation. Sol and Lowry they're old school guys. They can play in any game. And I think their guard leadership, the young kid Mavlid, he's got guts. He's not afraid of anybody. And, you know, and he's good. He's better than I think he's shocking all of us. You know, and Siakam, you know, you don't have a superstar, but Siakam's damn good. He's close to being whatever I think there's only like 5 or 7 superstars, not 27 superstars as a lot of people have. But Siakam is coming, and I think this is the stage for him. And when he gets up against Boston or if he gets to play Giannis, that's going to be a hell of a matchup for him, and it's going to be fun to watch. You know, the bubble itself has had a lot of good moments, and I think some weird moments, and I think de-energizing moments a little bit. But I can't wait to get to the Final 8 and then, of course, to the Final 4. And when we get to those, I think you're going to see some great basketball. And I think the timing of players getting in better shape, having more confidence, and hopefully staying healthy.
To hear more from George Karl, go to truthandbasketball.com and hear from one of the all-time coaching greats, his latest podcast and some of the latest episodes, certainly of interest to Raptor fans, let alone basketball fans in general. Wayne Embry on one of the more recent episodes, also former Raptor head coach Dwayne Casey, head coach of the Pistons, and Darvin Ham, some of the more recent episodes from, again, truthandbasketball.com. Coach, we appreciate the time today. Thanks for joining us, and we look forward to chatting again soon. Stay safe and healthy.
Okay, guys. And by the way, those 3 episodes were all on race, by the way. And then I was educated by 3 great, great men, Darvin, Dwayne, and Wayne. They all had a different perspective and a direction. And I sat there and listened 90% of the time. It was a wonderful experience for me.